Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Oregon was underwhelming in a Rose Bowl loss to Ohio State. Is there any shame in losing to the team that looks like they're going to be the eventual national champion? No. But there are questions about the roster next season in Eugene. They'll have to replace a quarterback. Is Dante Moore going to be able to do that? What will they do at the running back position and some receiver positions and on defense? Here to talk about that and a whole bunch more, Spencer McLaughlin, Locked On Ducks podcast contributor, also at 750thegame.com. Spencer, let's put the Rose Bowl to rest. I'm going to bounce theories off you. You tell me true or false. Want to play the game?
All right, let's play the game. I love games.
Okay, so theory, Oregon, 24 days off, the lack of, the layoff between games created some rust. Ohio State's pretty good, talent-wise, very good, and well-coached. That's just too much for Oregon to overcome. Does that dog hunt in your neighborhood?
I'm going false on that one to an extent. To say that it's too much to overcome, I don't think is entirely accurate, because we saw Arizona State get off to a similar start against Texas. They were down 14-3 before you could blink. The difference was Arizona State got up to speed, shook off the rust, made adjustments, and should have won the football game. And you can't say that about Oregon. So I think you can look at the way that the long layoff teams performed, particularly in the first quarter, and say that's more of a hindrance than a benefit. But I don't think you can holistically say, well, that's the only reason that Oregon lost. Like, no, they still had an opportunity on the field against the team that they had beaten earlier this season to make the necessary adjustments and settle it, and they weren't ever able to do that. So I go false on that one.
Spencer, as you are trying to explain to people, you know, how much of this has to do with coaching? How much of Oregon's performance in the Rose Bowl, in your mind, raises concerns for Dan Lanning's staff?
I think a solid amount. You know, I'm not in full-blown panic mode that the coaching staff, as is currently constructed, is not capable of, you know, getting to a national championship game or winning a big game, because I watched them win several big games this season. They beat three playoff teams. They won a Big Ten championship. They beat the Ohio State team that's about to win a national championship, I think, by 15 to 20 points. So I think they certainly had a bad day. There's no other way to sugarcoat that, because, you know, the Ohio State roster, I think, is certainly in a couple spots better than Oregon's. But we saw on October 12th, that gap is not the Grand Canyon, or neither one of those games would have been close. Instead, just one of them was. And Oregon's got NFL players, or had on that 2024 team, NFL players littered at a variety of positions, offensive line, defensive line, maybe a couple corners as well. I think the secondary is one position group in particular that can really improve to help Oregon get to the level that they're trying to reach. But I don't think they were completely lacking for high-end all-conference caliber talent. I think they got out-schemed, and you watched Dylan Gabriel try to make throws, and when they would show kind of the behind-the-quarterback view watching the game on TV, John, a lot of times there was nowhere to go with the football. And you hand it to Jordan James, just like you did in the first meeting, there's nowhere for him to run. And Ohio State's making a lot of plays. And at the end of the day, those things come back to scheme. The Oregon staff outcoached Ryan Day and company on October 12th, and they got much worsely outcoached on January 1st. And I don't think you chalk that up and say, well, that means the staff isn't any good and this guy's got to go. And that, no, it means the coaching staff has to assess what they were missing, why it went so wrong, why they weren't able to figure out a rhythm after they got down, and then, you know, hope that they improve. Because, I mean, we're watching the NFL playoffs, John. I just watched Kevin O'Connell get clowned by Sean McVay. Is Kevin O'Connell a bum? Is he not capable of coaching? Is he any good? Because 2 weeks ago, He was the smartest guy to ever exist because he revitalized Sam Darnold's career. This sort of stuff happens in football far more often than you think. Jim Harbaugh and Justin Herbert just got blown out in a game against the Houston Texans. Are they not any good at their respective spots? No, of course not. It's just that the football playoffs are unique in that they give you one game, one opportunity. It's not, you know, a best of three, five, or seven in baseball, best of seven in basketball. Like, it's just March Madness style. It's one or done, and you can have a bad day.
We're talking to Spencer McLaughlin, who is on the Locked On Ducks, Locked On Pac-12 podcast, also a contributor here at 750thegame.com. Spencer, let's talk about what Oregon needs to do for next year. They'll have a hole at quarterback. Everyone presumes it'll be, an in-house candidate this time. They've got some other holes to fill. Where are your concerns? Where are you not worried? Where can they get better? You tell me.
Well, I think receiver's the one spot that I'm least concerned about. I'll lump tight end in there as well. I think Kenyon Sadiq is about to have a monster season and what could be his last one with Oregon, because, you know, Terrence Ferguson's going to get drafted here into the NFL in a couple months, and that along with Patrick Herbert's departure paves the way for Sadiq to be the number one guy, and they just don't make a lot of tight ends like him. But with Evan Stewart coming back and bringing over Malik Benson from Florida State with the batch of young talent that I think is incredibly prepared and in some ways experienced to take the reins in 2025, I feel really good about Oregon's pass catchers. You know, DeCorian Moore is the number one wide receiver in the country. I have a hard time seeing him making no impact as a true freshman. I know it's a hard thing to do, but at wide receiver, we've seen it all over the country, and he is that sort of talent. So I feel good about those spots. I think with Mekhi Hughes coming over from Tulane, their running back room is going to be very similar to what it was last season. So I've got no concern there. I think quarterback and secondary are the two position groups that I have the most questions about. And, you know, there are only two options at quarterback, really, and it seems like it'll be Dante Moore, which makes a lot of sense. But We haven't seen him put together a full season. I know what the potential is, and it's really easy for Oregon fans to talk themselves into liking the kid because he is a mega talent who can be a first-round caliber pick in the NFL draft. But last time he got the chance to start, John, and why he came to Oregon to sit, he kept throwing the ball to the other team, and it was often returned for a touchdown. So I need to see some tangible growth from him in game settings before I'm ready to just declare him a Heisman Trophy contender for, you know, an Oregon quarterback for the, you know, fourth straight season, as they've had the last three, two with Bo Nix and one with Dylan Gabriel. But, you know, secondary, they're losing their top six guys, and you can think of whatever you like, or think whatever you like about, you know, the unit Oregon had this year, and the lasting impression isn't a good one because of how the Rose Bowl went, but I don't care how you've recruited, and Oregon has done very well in that position group the last couple cycles, this one in particular. Six guys, John, that's a lot. That's a lot to just up and replace immediately. They brought in a couple of transfers who I feel good about. Then I'm in the safety from Purdue, and Theron Johnson, the DB from Northwestern. Those guys are probably starters, but that still leaves four to five other guys who are going to have to be able to have a role on this team. So I'd say quarterback and secondary are the two spots I look at and go, I don't quite know what Oregon's going to be able to get.
Are your eyes on the portal in the spring or spring football in general? Because we've watched Dante and we've watched Austin Novosad and other guys in spring balls before, and we've gone, gosh, that room's incredible. It's deep, but it's another thing to have that person be your starter. So are you watching spring ball for evidence that they've got answers there, or do you expect that they'll get in the portal and try to bring in a guy or two?
I think you can learn things during spring football. As of now, I know there's a proposal getting thrown around that they might do away with the spring portal window one day, which I understand. Coaches really don't like it. It would also potentially move the transfer portal to early January, which would be significantly better for all parties involved. But I think you can learn things in spring football and assess after the fact, which is why I actually think the spring portal makes some sense, even though I get the frustration from it. If you're a coaching staff, I think there's also a benefit to it as well, because you know, you might bring in some true freshmen or have a redshirt freshman you think are ready to go, and then you watch them in spring football and you go, yeah, I don't think they're there yet. Is there a guy available who's played for a couple of years so we can sit this guy for one more year, or you know, let him develop and slowly work his way into the rotation at really any position group? So I can't rule out Oregon bringing in more transfers. They added an interior offensive lineman from USC earlier today who's been a multi-year starter, and Emmanuel Pregnon. So I don't know that you can ever look at what Lanning's done the last couple of years and say, oh, he's definitely done now. He wouldn't possibly add. Nah, he's added guys anywhere that they feel is necessary. So I think Oregon is in a good spot and has plenty of potential. It's just about the coaching staff being able to get all of that potential out of a number of different position groups.
Build a case for Notre Dame winning on Monday night.
Oh, gosh. Come out in Michigan colors? I don't know, man. Like, I mean, when Ohio State doesn't play foolishly, they win. That's just the way, other than the road game at Oregon. That's the only time where they were hitting downfield shots, incorporating their receivers, and they ended up losing. And every time they get away from trying to be explosive in the pass game, they struggle on offense and lose. And I didn't think their offense looked the same against Texas, who had a good game plan and has got a really talented secondary. Jahdae Barron might be the best corner in all of college football. Andrew Makuba was really good. Like, they've got great players on the back end, to be sure. But Ohio State got in their own way more than anything. I mean, it was move the ball at will penalty that Texas wasn't really forcing so much as Ohio State was just committing. So I thought that was a consistent theme. And then there was another play in particular where, you know, Howard's got the option to keep the ball. Inexplicably, he does. If he hands it off to Quinshon Judkins, he's got a 20-yard gain minimum, maybe a touchdown if he makes the guy miss. Instead, Howard pulls the ball. Like, those were just self-inflicted wounds that kept popping up. So the only thing that stops Ohio State is Ohio State. Notre Dame has got a great defense. They're very well coached. Their secondary is really good. They have to find a way to use their rushing attack, which is the strength of their offense, to keep Will Howard on the sideline. Because if you let him have drives over and over and over again, eventually they're going to hit a big play. Eventually they're going to find a playmaker in space. You just can't give them those chances. So I'd pull an EA College Football 25 approach and just put on 2 o'clock from the moment you get the ball.
Love it. Spencer McLaughlin, you're the best. For people who want to check him out, follow him on Twitter. Checked out the Locked On Ducks, Locked On Pac-12 podcast. Spencer, thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, anytime, John. But remember, it's Locked On College Football now. Pac-12, RIP, sweet prince.
There you go. Locked On College Football. Thanks, Spencer. Look, I'll build a case for Notre Dame. Steven, let's play this game. Ohio State's got to turn the ball over. I think Chip Kelly's got to get out of his mind a little bit on calling plays. They had a really weird game plan against Michigan. Notre Dame does remind me in some ways, the way they play, of a better version of Michigan. They're physical. Michigan's quarterback could not throw. Notre Dame's quarterback is just okay throwing. Notre Dame's defense is good. Michigan's defense is pretty good. Like, there are some similarities between Michigan and Notre Dame that are hard to ignore, but I keep looking at Ohio State and the way they're playing, it is difficult to not imagine them posting a double-digit win in this game unless they turn the ball over multiple times.
Yeah, 100%. I'm with you on this. It is difficult, but I will say this. Texas had a goal situation down by 7 in the fourth quarter. They didn't get it. They end up fumbling. Jack Sawyer returns it for a touchdown, 14-point lead. So they were that close from having the game tied in the fourth quarter against Ohio State. And then you take, you know, 7 points off the board. It's not like the Ohio State offense was excellent against that Texas defense. Texas has a really good defense, but I think Notre Dame can battle up. I also would argue this, John. if I just look at the quarterback and coach situation for both teams, I probably pick Notre Dame's on both. I probably pick Riley Leonard over Will Howard, and I would pick Marcus Freeman over Ryan Day. And sometimes football is that simple where you just have the best player on the field, and Riley Leonard may be that guy when he has the ball. Like, he is hard to bring down. He can get those tough yards. If it's third and three and he's running the football, it's one of those situations where it's like Josh Allen in the NFL. Like, you can't bring him down. He's going to fall forward for a first down. So there is a chance where Spencer's right, you're right, Notre Dame comes out, runs the football, and can just kind of get yardage and get first downs, and Riley Leonard can be that guy. And then at the end of the game, we saw what Notre Dame did against Penn State. Their clock management was incredible. The way they handled...
They're smart. They're just smart. They execute well, and they're smart.
Marcus Freeman could be that guy where he's an elite coach, and he really steps out and proves it on Monday. So I think there is a chance that Notre Dame wins this game. Not a great one, but I think there is a blueprint for it.
Texas did some weird things. Steve Sarkisian ran an outside run play when he, inside the 5-yard line. I don't know what he was thinking, and Ohio State blew it up. But, I correctly picked both semifinal games against the spread, so I'm feeling good about my season record now. I'm guaranteed above 500 finish. But the thing that I was most proud of was I predicted Texas's points. I said Texas would score between 14 and 20 points. That's where they were headed. Ohio State's defense is one of the untold stories of this college football season. And when you look at them, you go back to everything that happened after the Oregon game in the early part of the season. They gave up 14 and 13 and 7 and 0 and 14 and 12 and 13. They just didn't give up any points. Oregon got them for 32 and then got them for 21. Everything in between was under 17 points or under. So you could kind of see defensively what Ohio State does to teams. And so I do think Notre Dame's in that same boat. So Notre Dame's got to find a way to get to 20 points. I think they can be in a game that is like a 21-20 game if they can make it that kind of game, or 20-17. They can play that kind of game. They can't play in the 30s. No, that just not enough offense. They run the ball. The quarterback's really limited down the field. Ohio State's got just better weapons in the pass game, better receivers, better quarterback. But I agree with you on the head coaching. I think Marcus Freeman has done the best job of anybody in the playoffs, and that includes Chip Kelly and Ryan Day. I don't think Notre Dame, on paper, was the second best team or the first team. They were not one of the top two teams that I would have picked. I think that Marcus Freeman, his team has executed well. They don't make mistakes. They have been situationally brilliant. They had an amazing sequence against Georgia in the quarterfinals where, they lined up and caused a problem, a penalty on Georgia. They did the same thing to Penn State. Like, they just kind of waited for Penn State to make a mistake, and Penn State made some mistakes. Notre Dame doesn't do that. And so it'll be really interesting to see the contrast of these two teams. Notre Dame wants to play tug of war. Ohio State's going to want to be a little more open and free. Really good defenses. I don't know what the over-under is on this game, but if Notre Dame's in it, it's something like 21-17 or 21-20 or 23-21. That's the kind of game Marcus Freeman can win. He cannot win a 31-28 game. That's Notre Dame's not getting there. So we'll have to keep an eye on the pace of this game. So I almost want to say, like, if your pick is Notre Dame plus the 8.5, you might want to go under, because it's that, it behooves you both ways. I don't know what the over-under is, but I got to think, let me just say what I would set the over-under at. Like, I would be hard-pressed to see this game being much above about 45.5, 46.5, 47.5 points. What is the over-under on this one, Steven? Do you know?
Let me pull it up here real quick. It's loading, searching. It is 46.5. It looks like you should be a bookmaker.
It's right in there. And I just think that's the number, and even if Ohio State runs away with it and, they get in the 30s, I think it could be that kind of game. It could be like 31-10 if they're going to run away with it. But Notre Dame's got to play this game, like try to play it, 23-21, 21-20, 20-17. That's the kind of mentality Marcus Freeman's got to have at the beginning of this game. I expect a lot of punting. I expect a lot of, Notre Dame going to try to shorten the game, run the football, limit the amount of possessions that Ohio State has, and then try to steal a possession or two. You know, whether that is going for it on fourth down and short or creating a turnover. All right, our big splash coming up, 4 o'clock, Carl Benson, former commissioner of the WAC, the Sun Belt, and the MAC. He'll be joining us. Lindsey Schnell will talk college basketball in the 5 o'clock hour. Be here.